Many of you have been asking, and now I'm pleased to announce my first course at the end of June. It's the first of three levels, starting with level one, but it's going to be anything but basic that you could find anywhere. This is a deep dive into how the universe and the zodiac was created, with mystery school concepts, which you know me for, and spiritual wisdom. I'd love for you to join me on this evolutionary astrology course to experience and connect with our own soul's truth. There are early bird prices. Join my waitlist now and hit the link in the show notes. Hello and welcome to this episode of the Venus Investor Evolutionary Astrology Podcast. And of course, it is Gemini season, and this episode is taking us right up to the end of Gemini season, really, from the 14th of June through to the full moon in Capricorn on the 22nd of June, which is actually Cancer season, but just at the beginning. But for now, this Gemini season, it's buzzing, really is. It's completely changeable. In fact, there are real shifts coming up, not just because of Gemini, but Gemini is lifting us out of this heavy thought processes, fixed ideas, which was very much Taurus, so that we roll with these changes, that we're ready to lift ourselves out of this density of this organized feelings and thinkings and thought processing, go, okay, I'm up for something new. So we're going to start on the 14th of June when Gemini's ruler, Mercury, is conjunct the sun for a day or so. And this is almost like another Gemini new moon because, you know, Mercury is Gemini's ruler and they're joining the sun like it was this new moon. But I want to ask you, are you feeling this Gemini season? I mean, I am not hearing too much about it from my friends. So I want to put that out there. You know, there are multiple layers of how you might experience Gemini. And maybe you're not going to feel Gemini, but you might notice the layers of connectivity, more emails, more fuss around things, more funny jokes and hilarity, some flirting, in fact, and maybe meeting new people and even a little bit of anxiety or little irritation. All of those things in Gemini. But also on top of that, in a less personal sense, I feel there is far more room for whistleblowers and for new data to come out, because that's what Gemini does. It gives us this information or opens us up to the information. So far, you know, all that information that has been coming out, all that whistleblower hasn't been in the mainstream news. It's just been on Twitter, now X. And we haven't really had any major media blow-ups. And I'm still waiting for that Gemini season. But we have had Europe going to the polls, Europe voting and making decisions, which is really Gemini. And of course, within that, we've had a complete swing of sides, or quite a few swings of sides and movements that have really kind of surprised the powers that be. So much so, that's the surprise, that Macron, president of France, has called an election just like that, a Gemini sudden decision. And it does make you wonder, makes you think how France and the UK can just call an election just like that, and whether they're hiding anything. Why are they just fleeing all those top jobs? What is going on in the shadow here? What is behind those decisions, those snap decisions? Are we just getting the top line? And also, you know, in that voting swing, that Ursula von der Leyen, you know, the president of Europe, didn't like the outcome and says, we're going to fight this result. And I was thinking, well, isn't she elected chief to do the duty to serve and to serve the electorate, not fight against what they ask for? That's why I don't really like large federal governments. And also in that sense, in the political sense, you know, this is the end of the Tory party. And of course, it's the end of Rishi Sunak as any kind of political pundit. And he is, of course, the Prime Minister of the UK. He walked out of the D-Day landings remembrance service. How do you manage that as a representative of a company? And so the media are calling this out as the end of the Tory party. And they've obviously been saying that for a while, but this is another nail in the coffin. And of course, he apologised. But well, how deep did that apology go? It was a Gemini apology. You know, he went to this interview and then refused to answer the questions. And you might go, well, that's not very Gemini. Gemini's going to talk. But actually, yeah, you know, it's like now you see it, now you don't attitude. You know, only questions I want, I'm going to flit around and just do what I want and speak when I want about what I want and not go into the shadow. So I thought that was very Gemini season. So I had a look at Rishi Sunak, Prime Minister of UK's chart. And of course, he's always been a bit doomed in that position. You know, first of all, the recent solar eclipse on his Aries moon, practically exact. You know, an eclipse on your moon is going to cause for deep excavations. And this was then transited by Chiron, the wounded healer. So there must have been real revelations about himself within that. He must have been, you know, deep within his own reverie. And of course, a moon in Aries isn't known for their empathy about others. It's empathy for the self, really, their concerns, you know, being the baby of the zodiac. The Aries moon has needs. And potentially here has some revelations or ideas with that solar eclipse drop. But any eclipse on your moon is not going to be the easiest of aspects, even if it does take you eventually or right away to a better place emotionally. And it's the upgrade in the longer run. Of course, there are going to be deeper ramifications about that. There's a real learning there. So he's been through that already, Rishi. And then on top of this, he's got his Taurus, Sun and Mercury. They are conjunct right next to where Jupiter and Uranus had their recent conjunction. And that, of course, was the aspect of the year, the blow up. It's an explosive game changer, which it certainly has been for him. If you want to look at astrology, look at Rishi Sunak's chart and see how it's all played out, all the aspects. He's such a good example. And then, of course, not long after that explosive aspect on his Sun, Mercury, he calls the election in a month. You know, doesn't America have like a 2-year run-up? And we all know who the key players are. You know, he has given the UK a month to turn this around. That's so Gemini. Let's do it quick. Let's do it fast. Let us get it out. Also, his Sun Mercury conjunct in Taurus was at the same spot in July, August 2022 when the North Node and Mars and Uranus all combined on that spot. But what was happening then, that was when he stabbed his then boss in the back, Boris Johnson, in order for himself to climb the ladder. So that's total elbow, get out the way, I'm coming through. Mars in Taurus. And of course, Mars is in Taurus right now, full steam ahead. I'm going to do what I want to do. If I'm at D-Day landing, remembrance service, and I don't want to be there, I'm going to go and I'm not going to answer any questions, I'm off. So these two aspects for Rishi Sunak, his Aries moon and his Taurus Sun Mercury, have just blown his house sky high. And it's funny because, you know, he had, as I know from a good friend whose sister-in-law went to university with him, he said back in university that he was going to be Prime Minister of Great Britain or of the UK. So he's clearly a career politician. This is a career move. But in essence, I'm not sure that he is really feeling, you know, he's got the job that he set out to get, his Taurian Mercury, I'm going to get this job, and the moon in Aries, this is what I want to do. And yet I think it's kind of probably deeply unsatisfactory for him, because for the last 2 months and going on for another 2 months, Neptune, the planet of delusion, has been in an exact square to his Venus, and his Venus is at 29 degrees Gemini. When I say exact square, they're both at 29 degrees of their respective signs. And of course, we know the 29 degree is the last degree of any sign. It's called the anaretic degree. And it's the degree that forces the crisis. It's like you've arrived at this last point of this sign and you have to kind of get to grips and do what you needed to do within this sign. This is your last chance saloon. And of course, this is Neptune. The dissolving, the more discombobulated, the spiritual, the ethereal, the vastness of Neptune. And any square here to Neptune at that last degree is going to make you question the narrative. It's going to make you question your dreams and the illusion that you've created for yourself. And of course, this week from the 14th, Mercury, Venus and the Sun are all going to transit 29 degrees Gemini, which is, of course, the anaretic degree of Gemini. But it's where Rishi Sunak has his Venus. So he's going to be feeling every single second of what comes next because of this square aspect. You know, the square is always going to be fruity. If it's not forcing an issue of some kind, the square is known to have a bite, whether a playful nibble or just you know, a little teasing flirting, or completely ferociously taken a chunk out of you. So there are three transits, three squares on top of the long-standing square, which is Rishi Sunak's Venus at 29 degrees Gemini, which is squaring Neptune at 29 degrees Pisces. The square is pressing on this delusion and, with Venus in Gemini, pressing on the lies that we might tell ourselves, or what we choose to ignore, and how we like to keep things nice by ignoring the shadow. Remember, this has been happening for 2 months. From the beginning of May, it's been happening, and it's going to continue to the end of August. So this is kind of quite powerful. Neptune does come along and dissolve things, attachments, boundaries, beliefs, your hopes and fears, to see them all fall apart in front of you. And I think Rishi Sunak has had these dashed completely. Hence his fast exit and his weird behavior. He's obviously been offered a job. Get here and we're going to change this. You know, we're going to see him reappear at some point, because he is leaving a sinking ship, that is the Tory party, with a little kick backwards to make it go down faster, we might say. Something is going on we don't know about. We may have to wait till Scorpio season for that to be revealed. So not only he's had these really difficult aspects and is processing through this week too, Rishi is also having a Saturn opposition. His Saturn is in Virgo, and this is opposite Pisces, where Saturn is now, mid-Pisces. And Saturn is obviously the ruler of the Capricorn full moon that happens later on, in a few days after these aspects. So he is definitely going to be feeling and experiencing the hard end of karma. I kind of feel like he knows he has failed. He knows he can't go any further. Saturn is so utterly restrictive in that way. And his Saturn in Virgo will be exacting, analytical, and really kind of hard-pressed to know the facts. And that's probably why he is a good banker. I'm saying good banker with inverted commas, because do we know if such a thing exists? He's a good banker in that he knows how to do it really well and thoroughly. So this Saturn opposition for him, you know, must be quite uncomfortable. And that Saturn in Virgo is trine his Sun Mercury. So it is an active part of who he is. That exacting, looking at the details, really running through things and trying to be right, wanting to do the best, but thinks he knows how to do it all. And this is all in the details. So, you know, I think that's why we've got Rishi kind of running away from all, whilst Europe and the Tory party burns. But don't worry, we're not going to continue with the Rishi Sunak. He's gone now. As I say, he turns up later on as the head of the WEF or something. But just a quick look at that other famous Gemini is Donald Trump, who is astrologically also in the eye of the storm. Because that bomb of the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction early this year, the conjunction of the year, is on his MC career point. And that obviously for him has been totally explosive, utterly destabilizing to a high degree. And these aspects happening next week that I'm talking about, the Mercury conjunct the Sun, are going to be right on his own Sun and his own North Node. So we're going to have Mercury conjunct the Sun at 23 degrees and then at 24 degrees, so that Mercury and the conjunct move over 2 degrees from the 14th and 15th of June. And these cover Donald Trump's North Node and the Sun. And it's going to be his birthday. So he's going to have a solar return with all these powerful ideas floating around. So he's in the hotspot for next year, whether he wins or loses in what's coming up. He's still going to be majorly in our minds and in the news. So going back to my earlier point, are you feeling this Gemini? Some of us really are. And if not, it's maybe a good time to engage in some of the flirting, you know, ignoring what's going out in the world, the fuss that's going on out there. Have your own bit of flirting, make your own connections, and start looking at things from a different angle, listening to people with opposing views. Because, you know, this Sun and Mercury conjunct Gemini on the 14th and 15th of June, and also if you've got planets anywhere, angles 23, 24 degrees, you know, this is a good time for you to get super creative and think of new ideas, think of plans and look at the detail of things. Because straight after this conjunction, whereby Mercury transits the Sun and then overtakes the Sun, as it were, so it becomes before it, going anticlockwise, So it also now becomes the evening star, just like we were talking about the Venus becoming the evening star, but we don't have quite the switch of personality that we have with Mercury that we do have with Venus, where she becomes the goddess of love instead of the goddess of war. You know, Mercury does do the same kind of aspect of going behind the sun and coming out to become the evening star now. And then Mercury actually catches up with Venus. So it's Mercury and Venus together now. And that's on the 17th, they actually make a conjunction. So it's kind of starts late on the Sunday, the 16th, through to Monday, the 17th, that we've got Venus and Mars together in Gemini. And because Venus has moved ahead and Mercury time kind of moving fast now, they both meet at that 29 degrees of Gemini. We're not going to talk about Rishi Sunak anymore, but it's on his Venus, but it's on the anaretic degree of Gemini. It's like forcing the point of information, forcing the point of ideas and how we might be thinking about things. So we might see some real change of mind here, a real like getting to grips with what information is there so that we can see. Also, because this is in square to Neptune, we're going to see some of the lies come out. Some of the kind of illusion that's been painted in front of us. You know, the Gemini is going to get it. If the Gemini is quick-witted and clever, this is opening up the mind of the collective, as well as the individual mind, to that great delusion from Neptune, the grand illusion. And this is on a world level of understanding the spiritual setup that we are in against or combined with the material setup. Since obviously the grounding in heavy Saturn is in Pisces too. And this is because our hearts, as in the Venus part of this, and our minds in Mercury are alerted with new, fresh Gemini thinking at the last degree. It's like a wake up, come on. But on a personal level, as opposed to the kind of global political arena, this could be your wake up call to what you might need to let go of in life. You know, this is a letting go with Neptune. This isn't a building. This is like, I've had enough. I've stood up for this long enough. I'm not going to listen to your bullshit any longer. You know, even if it is your own stuff you're telling yourself, you know, this is the break free. This is the mental breaking free from the chains that might have held you as these two, Venus and Mercury, sit on the last degree of Gemini. It's like the decision has been made for you because it squares Neptune, which is utterly releasing those binds that hold us. So I think this is kind of on a personal level, quite creative for us, really creative to move forward and leave behind what we don't need, leave the baggage. And then that's on the 17th. And then, of course, the next day or within that day, they both move into Cancer. And this is therefore, before they're both moving hand in hand, this is what we call a double ingress. They both step over the border from Gemini into Cancer together. So it's quite rare. And so we've got to take note of what's happening here. This is a definite change of scenery, a swap from one mode of being to another. So we're going from the progressive, fast-thinking, clever, tricky Gemini thinking to the slower sort of mood of empathetic feeling, bringing out our senses, bringing out our caring nature and involving our sentiment. This is the sea change on the flow of emotion. And this obviously bodes well for the Gaza situation, the genocide, and the potential outpouring of grief leading to support of ending any kind of atrocities that are going on. This is the goodness of Cancer, the watery essence coming forward. Now, on the 20th, just a couple of days after that, the 20th of June, the Sun makes the same square, squaring Neptune at the anaretic degree. And it's like the lie is being batted forward. We've all had this flush of emotion. It's like, hold on a minute, the lie comes out again. And this is quite irritating. But of course, the Sun moves very quickly on the same day. It spends less than 24 hours practically on that 29 degree and moves into Cancer for Cancer season, where we truly start on the 20th, later in the day on the 20th. So it's going to be the 21st in the Antipodeans. And I feel like then the media fuss could die down, the switching around and the complexity of lies and stories. But obviously that Pandora's box has been opened now by Gemini season. It's not just going to go away. But we might see then a shift of the all-pervading ideas of the time. You know, Gemini, the media has been ruling, and now the families in Cancer, the domestic, is ruling. We might see a whole swell of power back to the people. And we might see, obviously, in the UK, we're going to our general elections on the 4th of July. What a day to pick, taking someone else's day. But anyway, the dissolving nature of Neptune, which of course is in Pisces, trining with Cancer, making a trine an easy flow of connection. So here in the last degree of the zodiac for a few months, it's surely, you know, moving into Cancer season, feeling our emotional setup. It's forcing various dimensional setups to be deconstructed. And I mean, you know, because it's Cancer, because it's the family, because it's people that we have around the dinner table. It means, you know, our political systems that are in Capricorn and will be coming under focus in the next Capricorn full moon. But we can see that the other side of things are dissolving. And I'm hoping here that we're going to see that this is not just like the two-party system dissolving, but the structures and the programs that hold us bound to our current culture, because we're moving into we matter, people matter with Cancer season. We have got another year at least going through to January 2026 of Neptune in Pisces. And I think we're going to miss it. I think we're going to miss the opening, the dimensional opening, the spiritual essence that this brings, that allows our soul and our dream time to become much more important and center of our concerns. And this is the breaking down then with the material plane. This is like the big cosmic breath, the breath in, the breath out that the cosmos makes, whereby spirit breathes into matter to take us into the ultimate density and then breathes out. We're in the current stage of breathing out back to spirit. So there will be much more releasing of our etheric, astral and physical bodies during this next year, with Neptune on these last degrees going backwards into Pisces and coming forwards again. It's going to move into Aries and then come back into Pisces again. So that's why I say it's like more or less. But finally, January 2026 is moved out. And these structures that we've created are bound to then dissolve much more. We are going to see how these structures that we have created, or the world has created, have held us bound to the material struggle. This is the slavery drudgery systems that feed only the top and leave the rest in a lack. So I was kind of looking about Neptune through the ages, how Neptune comes into Pisces and has all its themes, because it rules Pisces, promoted. And the themes would be art. There's a big surge in art, and there's surge in romance and femininity. And it's about the oppressed immune system too, which obviously we've seen happening on a great scale. And perhaps that's because we've got our personal defense, our barriers, we're being lost, we don't have the boundaries, and therefore we can go into spiritual ecstasy or the rapture. And perhaps we are connecting interdimensionally, feeling into other sensations, into the dream world, in otherworldly places, losing the sense of boundaries and borders. This is on sensing into the mass and the collective. And on this way, this flow of ourselves, this is also the flow of our value and of movement of money, like the flow of money, where it goes, how it shifts around and creates swells over here and lack over there, like the sea in a way, the way the sea moves. And then on top of the glamour, the Neptune glamour, this, of course, is the Hollywood star glamour. There is that. But there's also the glamour that, say, a witch may cast over you so that the veil is created. These are all Neptune themes. And so I went back to the 14 years Neptune was in Pisces in 1192 to 1207. This is proper Viking King Alfred time. But also in France, there was this, where the troubadours came about. These are the romantic heroes of mythical stories, and they became hugely popular. And this was very much encouraged by total Neptune in Pisces lady Eleanor of Aquitaine. Eleanor of Aquitaine was at once Queen of France. She was Duchess of Aquitaine as well, and she was Queen of England too. And that was when England had a whole swathe of the west side of France too, from Normandy down through to Biarritz and Spain. That was England at that point. And she was Queen of England. But before that, she married the King of France as well and had that marriage annulled. So she promoted this wonderful romantic idea of courtly love. And at that time, before then, women were treated like cattle. And now this idea that a woman should be courted and romanced and that you would actually marry her for your deep love was an impulse that grew and grew at that time. And this is very Neptune in Pisces. And then at the same time, there were the Knights Templar, more heroes, but they created the bank as we know it today. They were coming from such a higher ideal of how money should be transferred around. There was intelligence there. England at the time played a ginormous ransom because Richard the Lionheart had been captured. The king had been captured. And this is like another romantic hero story. But in paying this ginormous ransom, England had really betrayed the amount of wealth they really had. They couldn't hide it from the populace anymore. They just spent all this money getting the king back, who had rather, if you think of it in that way, stupidly got himself captured on one of his crusades. So there was all this kind of romantic heroism coming about and taken on as the culture that we have a much more romantic idea of things now. At that time as well, between 1192 and 1207, Genghis Khan created the vast empire the world has ever seen with China, and therefore sort of taking out all the borders in between, just created this huge, huge entity. And there we are, the Neptune. It had no boundaries. It just went on forever. So there's a taster for Neptune in Pisces. And then 300 years later, was that, 250, that we get in 1356 to 1370, so another 14 years, that's when the Black Death in Europe came about. Are you recognizing any patterns here? This was a huge chronic plague, spread by something that was largely invisible, that we couldn't understand, that was indefinable, which was spread by fleas. So Neptunian that we couldn't understand that at the time. And so there was this huge plague. And again, are you recognizing any patterns here? But this was also a massive depopulation. I'm like, unfathomable as Neptune is. It was huge. The epidemic of the Black Death, Black Plague, killed 30 to 50% of the entire population of Europe. I mean, in today's term, that's between 75 and 200 million people died within a few years. And they didn't have enough people to bring the harvest in because so many people had died. So that's just an incredible way of loss that Neptune in Pisces will emphasize, the loss and the spreading of disease like that and the lack of immune that comes with Neptune. You have to be concerned with your immune and shore it up and help it. So also Genghis Khan-wise, the Khans. I love the Khans. It's like the idea as well that they used in Game of Thrones. The Khans were replaced by the Ming Dynasty in China. And there were epic shifts that going on beyond the human and the personal, the collective. Because at that time, they also translated the Bible into English. This is giving such a deeper understanding of religion and access to spirituality on a personal level, which was completely and utterly unheard of. That, these Bibles were written in Greek or Latin, and now it's in English, that everyone, the masses, can understand and get to grips with, have their own view of it. This was incredible. This was Neptune in Pisces. And it took another 200 years in the next period for the Bible then to be translated into German. For instance, that's, an incredible feat. So moving on to the next period when Neptune was in Pisces, we've got 1520 to 1534. That was when King Henry VIII of England had his six wives, really dissolving the idea of the institution of marriage for people. Like, he can do it, I can do it. Not that you were allowed to. Loosening people's heads from their bodies as well, we might think. And also definitely loosening the connection England had with Rome. And of course, Rome, who were spending all the money and had all the power, so Neptunian, had all the glamour too, had all the hierarchical glamour. Because that was when we had in the UK the dissolution of the monasteries, when King Henry VIII broke with Catholic Rome and said, no, I am the head of the church. I'm going to be the spiritual anointed one. That's so Pisces Neptune. This is also when Cortez invaded Mexico and shipped Aztec gold to Europe. So this is another shift of money, the flow of money. And this increase of gold destroyed the economy of Europe. So we went from so much richness, we went to so much lack. And that's so Neptune, the more you hold on to something in Neptune, the more it just like sand falls through your fingers. This was also when, at last, the Martin Luther translated the Bible into German, at last, 200 years later after the English. And Copernicus, who also was promoting the idea of a heliocentric universe, i.e. the sun in the middle, not the earth in the middle, he had a theory on currency that was then promoted. And Magellan sailed around the world, navigated the sea. So we conquered the oceans with Neptune in Pisces. So those are kind of some major feats going on that you can see the dissolving of things and the shifting of money, dissolving of long-held structures like monasteries. And that's quite a big feat now. I don't think we can quite grasp how powerful a shift that would have been. And of course, the money that involved as well, the money that we would have freed up would have been incredible too. The next time after that, 150, 200 years later, was 1684 to 1697. And this one, the Bank of England was chartered. So there goes the money container again. And then there was the Brazil gold rush. But what I find most poignant about this time with Pisces in Neptune, which resonates today, is that we had the Salem witch hunts and the witch trials all over. But the Salem witch hunts in 1692 actually started. This is kind of super interesting, whereby there was mass hysteria. Neptune in Pisces, a whole community believing in the devil, or that the devil was within the community and with actual people, and eventually condemning each other, turning on each other because of this spiritual kind of outburst and deeper understanding, in one sense, that the devil would take over them, is so luciferic, but also that, you know, these people had been maligned and they couldn't really put their finger on it, could they? Couldn't really accuse, you know, this is really people accusing each other. There was no defense, there was no immunity to this. And this is kind of where the mass witch hunts that took anyone who wasn't turning up at church every Sunday and wasn't doing good, or who lived outside of the community, was then going to be accused. You know, you lived in the forest and you took herbs, you were going to be accused. If you were the sort of old lady that someone would come to you for help, you know, for childbirth or for, you know, when you needed advice, you were going to be accused. And this is where they got everyone to be really conscripted to the matrix, to the program. This is where you were not allowed to be outside of the program. This is where you had to become involved deep into this illusion that was being created. If you were outside it, you got accused of being a witch. Everybody wanted to conform because they were scared for their lives. And potentially now we're coming back to here again. We can see some of that happening again. You know, people being accused of whatever, racist, anti-vax, all those words they accuse of you just to keep you quiet. So you can see this is where the humanity then fell deep into their great delusion of the patriarchy. And again, we have this idea that, you know, you're outside of community, and perhaps, you know, there is a dissolving of this idea of wanting to even be part of that patriarchy. So that was 1684 to 1697. Neptune went into Pisces again in 1847 to 1862. And here we had quite some advances in water as well, because there was a decree that went out in 1848 that every new house built should have a water closet or an ash pit privy. We all want one of those. Can you imagine? There wasn't anything before. And also now, you know, we're having the same thing with gas. Neptune rules gases. Here they're saying you're not allowed to have a gas boiler. A gas boiler is going to be taxed beyond your capabilities in the future. So every new house has to have various kind of new gas and water works. And this is what they were doing back between 1847 and 1862. Well, actually, this was on 1848. This is the decree for building new houses, the way forward. And in 1858, in London, they commissioned a proper sewage system. I mean, these are like huge water kind of issues of Neptune. And then in 1861, Thomas Crapper, who invented the first water closet or toilet, was hired by the royals. So these are huge water movements for just like the circumnavigation of the world as well, conquering the seas. For Neptune in Pisces, that was in other areas. In 1859, Darwin released Origin of the Species. This was again drawing out as one delusion into another, drawing us deeper into the material world, so that we loosened our concept of the spiritual world being created by God, and therefore creationism. This was him saying, no, this didn't happen. This was all happened through to survival of the species, survival of the fittest. And now, even from that point, we went so far into materialism that the church even denies creationism. They say Genesis is just symbolic now. That's taken away all the magic, all the spirituality out of the church, out of how we came to be. They're saying it was just a material expression, just a physical growth, and nothing to do with the evolution of our consciousness and evolution of spiritual essence. So this was quite a big move, and it had to happen in order for us to go further into materialism and understand that, then to combine it with spirit and come out the other side. The other thing that happened around this time was the second opium war. The opium worlds, of course, you know, that's so Neptune in Pisces, just letting your girl self go into other worlds via opium. And then there were railroads crisscrossing across Europe being developed. So mass travel, people were allowed to go beyond their borders at this point. And the laws of planetary motion were agreed upon, and Isaac Newton's theory of gravity to create Kepler's laws. So we had real advances in what was happening within the universe and maybe interdimensionally. And lastly, at this point, I thought it was quite exciting that the Thames freezed over in this time. We have all these beautiful Victorian paintings of people ice skating on the Thames, both their hands in a muff, so they're not putting their hands out. But we see that on Christmas cards, Victorian style Christmas cards. But anyway, that was an actual thing. The Thames froze over, and potentially it was like a thick soup, quite filthy at that point. But it was so cold. We had a freeze going on then. And actually Chipperfield Circus performed on the ice there. So these are kind of real, you can see how Neptune in Pisces might work and how we have in this current era had such an influx of spiritual essence. And we've actually really felt ourselves come out of density, come out of just understanding the physical world, really has, as humanity opened up, you know, it started off with just being New Age, but now it's actually how most people think. And we also have the desperate attempts for CERN to connect interdimensionally. So there are some kind of openings up within that concept as well. And coming back then to present time, this brings us to the solstice. This is where in the northern hemisphere, the sun is at the highest in the sky, and in the southern hemisphere, the sun is lowest in the sky for winter. But actually, crucially, it's closer to Earth at this point. So that's why in the southern hemisphere, the winters aren't so bad. And the sun is Sol, and it's standing still, stis, solstice. And also for our astrological purposes in tropical astrology, this happens as midwinter and midway through our zodiac. The Earth tilts so that it faces on the line on Earth, which is the Tropic of Cancer, the upper ring around the Earth. And this solstice aligns with many ancient structures on Earth, such as Stonehenge, so that we on Earth can see the passage of time. So we can see where our place is within the whole universe and in the whole flow of passage of time. And in tropical astrology, we are following the Platonic great year of 26,000 years, or 25,920, which connects to the human breath, the same amount of human breaths that we have in a day, and extrapolating that into a year, the 80 years and 10. So I feel that we are duty bound here at solstice time to connect in to where we are on our journey, and a small part of where we are in this whole great unfolding, and to give thanks for whatever that is. And the next day after Cancer season starts, the next day, the 22nd of June, we have the Capricorn full moon. And this is where the moon is at 1 degree Capricorn, sun is at 1 degree Cancer. This is the 1 degree Capricorn opening stanza of the patriarchy, the ruling elite, those that govern, and the commercial corporate world and global political empires. Now, this is bringing those ideas, those themes, those people and institutions and their overpowered corruption to the surface for all of us to see. Because it's the corruption there that we're looking at, because Pluto has been going through Capricorn for so long and will be back in Capricorn in October and through to November. So yeah, there is going to be a bit more argy-bargy within the politics. It's a good word for it. And this full moon is conjunct the deep roots, actually, of Europe and the Euro. It's actually conjunct its IC, which is at 3 degrees Capricorn. So we're looking at Europe as a whole entity, and its IC, its roots, it's where it's held, its platform it's grown from, is within 3 degrees Capricorn. So it's deep within, growing out of the patriarchy, growing out of these big institutions. And next to its IC at 10 degrees is Europe's sun, 10 degrees Capricorn. So this is the federal state of Europe and its coinage to be in full focus. And as you can see that the voting, the recent sort of Geminian voting has caused a stark fall in the euro. And this has prompted President Macron of France to call his election as well. So they've got a fast turnaround election too. So I really feel with this Capricorn full moon that we ought to look out for what the banks are doing at this time. And therefore, we also want to look at what the full moon's ruler is doing at this time, which is Saturn. And Saturn has just recently gone through the squares to Venus, then Mercury and the Sun, so been prompted, and is just about to go retrograde in another week. So Saturn is right now stationing still. It's holding the fort in Pisces, holding the fort in a very water, fluid world that is potentially falling apart underneath it, dissolving under Neptune's influence. And so I don't feel this is good for Europe, but really it could be quite good for us personally. So we have to look at where Saturn is in your chart for this full moon. And perhaps that is where you need to shore up some stability. Or if you feel like you've got leaks going on, you need to attend to them that maybe you weren't aware of before, or where you were, but now you've got to put in some work to get it done, to get it sorted. See potentially where you might be holding on too tight to the plan and perhaps, you know, let go. Perhaps the plan needs readjustment. And of course, I've been reading a lot about Saturn, and I know that so many people are kind of scared of his influence and going, oh no, he's going to make me do loads of hard work. He is the Lord of Karma, but he's also the Master Manifester, which is good. He helps you build eventually. So I would use this time around this Capricorn full moon to give Saturn a little dedication, a ritual dedication, I mean, so that you can check in with him to say, yes, I am honoring my duty. I have taken the time to do due diligence, and I want to thank you for your stability so that I can reach up to greater goals. Because Saturn loves you. You know, he didn't want you to reject him. Saturn loves you to check in with him rather than run away from the plan and what you have to do and your responsibility. So it only gives a little moment within your meditation to give yourself or to give Saturn some of your sacrifice, be that sort of time, effort, gift to kind of check in so that you are in control and you're working with Saturn, not against him. But let's see what happens in the wider world here. So I want to go more into Saturn, who is aka Satan, aka Ahriman, who I've been talking about in previous episodes. So I'm going to continue that theme of what Saturn is up to, following on from this. I hope you found that useful, and I hope that you do get to tune into Saturn and get some good creator, solid, stable support from this. And I look forward to seeing you next time. Many of you have been asking, and now I'm pleased to announce my first course at the end of June. It's the first of 3 levels, starting with level 1, but it's going to be anything but basic that you could find anywhere. This is a deep dive into how the universe and the zodiac was created, with mystery school concepts, which you know me for, and spiritual wisdom. I'd love for you to join me on this evolutionary astrology course to experience and connect with our own soul's truth. There are early bird prices. Join my waitlist now and hit the link in the show notes.